it's very, very question. Many people wouldn't teach Gemara to women, and we're teaching Gemara to women, this Gemara, and even if you teach Gemara to women, like the last Gemara in the world that you want to teach them is the one that we're going to learn tonight. So this is out of no, this is attributed to two things. One is my tremendous amount of respect for your intelligence, and two, because of a little bit of a masochist. We started talking last week about Bruria. Bruria is not, some subjects are fascinating and some are difficult. This is a difficult subject to speak about, and because it's Bruria, and it's particularly complicated for, I think it's particularly difficult to teach this Gemara in a group of women. That's what I think. But I think it's also important. So let's do some background. And what you have in front of you, I'm going to go a little bit out of order because I think it'll be better that way. Do you see where it says Lamed Hey on your sheet? So this is a, you see the Lamed Hey? Right. So this Gemara, this is a series of Gemaras that are speaking about different leaders, the greatest leaders of the Jewish community during the Roman occupation of Yerushalayim, who were persecuted and prosecuted and killed very often by the Romans. The 10 famous ones are the Asara Haruge Malchus, the 10 martyrs, but there were more. In fact, there were probably thousands more of people that were killed, and there were many great people that were not killed, but they were imprisoned and they were tortured. So it goes way beyond the Asara Haruge Malchus. So one of the most famous and pious of them all was Rabbi Chanina ben Trajan, probably the one of the ones that everybody knows a lot about. Rabbi Chanina ben Trajan was a close friend of Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva was really the one that was leading the Mered, he was leading the rebellion against the Hadrian decrees. This is the history of it. This was already, the Beis HaMikdash was already destroyed, and the Gullus had already ensued. Many Jews already left Eretz Yisrael. And Rabbi Akiva was very, very bent on getting back the Jewish, like today, getting back the Jewish government over Israel, and getting it away from the Romans. And in that regard, he created an army, like a whole Tzahal, with Bar Kokhba, with thousands and thousands of people joined his army. And he was very much Torah-based. Torah-based, but obviously, it was Rabbi Akiva. But by Torah-based, I mean that his feeling and his decision was that we should, even though the Hadrian decrees were such that anybody who studies Torah will be killed, that's how Hadrian came after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and that was one of his decrees. He said, no, we're going to Dafka study Torah in public, in the public squares, and we're going to be in their face. This was part of that chutzpah was part of the rebellion. That's how you make a rebellion. You can't make a rebellion quietly. It's not a rebellion. A rebellion is a loud thing. And thousands of people joined him, and thousands of people were killed by the Romans. This wasn't kid stuff. This was a very, very real. The Romans became, because of Rabbi Akiva, the Romans became so allergic to rebellion that even after things became more peaceful and Hadrian died, and so there was still a lot of worry that the Jews were going to rebel again. So like in the next generation with Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who was able to make peace with the Romans, what they were worried about is we don't want rebellion. Rebellion was very, very strong. So that was Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva's maiden friend, and this is Harusa, was Rabbi Chanina ben Trajan. Rabbi Chanina ben Trajan was a tzaddik. He was a great teacher. And he would teach Torah. He was one of those that taught Torah in public. Rabbi Akiva tended to teach, if I'm not mistaken, in the old city of Yerushalayim, in the Kordo. that was his place to teach. I mean, the next time you walk past that, you know, with the pillars and everything, if you really not think so much about the. That's where all of this took place, right there in that area. And Rav Hanina ben Trajan was someone outside of Yerushalayim and taught there. Each one had thousands of people. Thousands of people came to learn Torah with them in public, even though it was dangerous, even though it was a death penalty. So they finally arrested Rav Hanina ben Trajan. I'm giving you a little bit of background, but this is already the end of the story. They arrested Rav Hanina ben Trajan, and let's read the Gemara together. I'm going to read it, and then we'll comment. Amrulay, so the Roman said to him, "My taima ka asakta b'Torah. Why did you learn Torah? Like, why were you doing this?" Amar lahu, and he answered them, "Kasher tzivani Hashem Elokai, because God told me to." This is the command from Hashem. Now, you have to understand, at this moment of he realized that life and death, his life and his death, were dependent on his answer. And there's a lot of answers you can give. Why are we learning Torah? Well, I just wanted to, you know, it was academic. I wanted to see what, you know, what was in there that you were so against. I mean, there could have been so many reasons. The ones that the reason that the Romans did not want to hear is because Hashem told us to. I don't think it was because they necessarily had something against Hashem. I think it was because that was what gave us the koach to rebel. The koach to rebel was our godliness, and they didn't want to hear that we're doing something because Hashem said we should do it. That was very threatening to them. And that's exactly what he answered, a smart man. That's exactly what he answered, realizing that this would bring him death on the one hand, and on the other hand, that's what rebellions are all about. This is how they weaken the Romans. So he said, Kasher tzivani Hashem elikai. Miyad, immediately, Gazru alav l'sreifa, they said that they sentenced him to death by being burnt at the stake, l'sreifa. They would burn people, tie them up to a piece of wood and burn them. At the same time, val ishto, they said his wife, lahariga. Hariga is when you get decapitated. Val bito, three people in the family, Leshev Bakuba Shalzoinais. She was a beautiful woman, the daughter, and the sentence for her is that she had to live in a brothel. So here we had three sentences, great, great tragedies for the Jewish people. The Gemara wants to say something deeper here and say, but how could it be? I mean, what could they possibly have done to deserve this type of punishment? We're not talking about in the eyes of the Romans, but in the eyes of Hashem, what could they possibly have done? And this, even after the answer, it doesn't explain it, but we'll say what it says anyway. All of Lusrefa, the reason why he, from Shemayim, had a decree of being burnt to death, Shahayahoges Hashem Bos Yosef, because he had a custom, this Rav Hanina ben Trajan had a custom that he would pronounce the name of Hashem according to the way it's written. You're not allowed to do that. Right? In other words, we read Yudkei Vavkei and we read Adonai, or we say Hashem. There's even bigger names of Hashem with 42 letters, and he would pronounce it straight out and thereby do miracles. Rashi says, Dorsho Barboim Ushtaim Osios, Rashi says on the side, if you find it there, he would say the 42 letters, Vasaba Mashachafzi, would be able to perform miracles. This is something you can do when you know how to work the Kabbalistic, if you're familiar, just if I go to tangent for a second, there's a book called Sefer HaYetzirah, a Kabbalah book, attributed to Avraham Avinu. Sefer HaYetzirah talks about the letters of the Aleph Beis, and each one of the letters of the Aleph Beis as a building block of creation. The way we understand the Aleph Beis is it's not just a arbitrary group of letters, or the Chumash is not just an arbitrary group of words that are coming to describe something, but Ba'asara Ma'amaris Nivra Olam, when Hashem created the world with Dibur, with Vayomer, 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 10 times, he was using the letters of the Aleph Beis as the building blocks of creation. It means every letter of the Aleph base has a certain energy to it. Aleph has an energy base, has an energy, Gimel has an energy. I don't claim to understand this. I'm just telling you that's what the Sefer HaYetzirah is all about. Sefer HaYetzirah teaches us the energy of each letter and how it works. I mean, for instance, the easy one is Beis. Its energy is bracha. And all of blessing came to the world through the Beis. That's the first letter of the Torah. They were arguing the Sefer HaYetzirah says, who gets to be the first letter of the Chumash? And Beis won. Beis won because everything should be bracha. But again, it's not just Medrash. It's a very, very deep thing. So what would happen is, when the Kohen, Gadol, let's say on Yom Kippur, would go into the Holy of Holies, he would say the name of Hashem out. What was the significance of saying the name of Hashem out? Like, you know, here he is in private, and he says the name of Hashem. But what it means is that he took the letters of the Aleph, he took the holiest letters in the holiest setup, and he would say it out, meaning that he was getting that Kohen Gadol in the Holy of Holies, on the holiest time, at the holiest moment, in the holiest place, was taking the actual letters of the creation and getting right down to the basics with Hashem and talking to Hashem about getting right back to the purpose of the world and getting away from all of the Vishigasim and the branches and everything that's grown out of that very basic place. But it'd be very, very basic. And when you do that, you're not bound by any nature that's around you, because you're earlier than nature. You're before nature. So if you're before nature, don't try this at home. This is not something that you're supposed to do. Just explains you how it works. So that's the idea of saying the Shem HaMefarash. That's what it is, and that's what Kabbalists claim to be able to know how to do. How to manipulate the shamos of, and then they can do other things, like they can move this letter here and that letter there. There's like a whole, if you know what you're doing, it's pretty cool. You can really build the world, destroy the world, perform miracles, all kinds of things. You do all about the letters. So Rav Hanina ben Dosa was a great mekubal, and he would, during the Roman times, he would do this, I guess, to help people, and it was an avera. It's an avera. Not allowed to do it.
Is it still strange that they could find a reason why God chose, why this happened to him? Who understands why?
First of all, I mean, they were much greater than us, but I guess they were trying to figure out something that he might have done wrong.
Yeah.
What could he have possibly done wrong? Was Tzadik, or could he have been Dos, or could he have been Tragic? What could he have done wrong? And this is the only thing that was a strange thing. And, you know, why he would have this Misubis, I don't know. Why
and
he
also,
would have.
Aren't you supposed to, shouldn't he have tried to save his wife and his their lives by not answering like that? Or...
you know, in the time of, it's a good question. You know, I wish I knew the answer to any of these questions, but I know that in the time of Shas HaShmad Shani, that's what the Gemara always answers, that this was the time of Shmad. It was the time that they were trying to eradicate the Jewish people. Everybody who was in the cause was in the cause. It just didn't mean as much to die. They were just interesting, by the way, just while we're at the letters. Rabbi Akiva, the most famous of the martyrs, so before he was killed, so he started to say the Shema. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, v'hayim marish be'echad, and he said a long dalet, Echad, which is why we do that. And his students, the Gemara says, were standing around him, and they asked, Rabbi Adkan, Rebbe Adkan, enough. I don't know exactly what they wanted from him. And he gave them a little speech. No, he says, to answer your question, he said, my whole life I'm thinking, as Rabbi Akiva said, my whole life I'm thinking that I say every day, b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol modecha, will I ever have the schus to actually give my nefesh up for Hashem? Now again, I'm not recommending martyrdom. I'm just saying that that this is where they were at that time with the Romans. The student said, Rebbe, it's enough. The Arizal says that in the first verse of the Ahavta Es Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha b'chol miyodecha, you have all of the letters of the Shem HaMefarish. And Rabbi Akiva would have known how to scramble those letters, which is why we say it, very powerful. Those letters, we have those letters. Rabbi Akiva would have known how to scramble those letters and perform a miracle. Once you can do that, you perform a miracle and poof, go away with all the Romans that are trying to kill him. So when he started to say Shema, the students that were standing around, the Romans forced the students to stand around him. The students that were standing around him said to him, oh, good, you're saying the Shema, now you're going to say V'ahavta Es Hashem Elokecha, and you're going to blow away all these Romans. They got very excited by this, says the Ari. And then he stopped. Hayimarech Be'echad, instead of going further into V'ahavta Es Hashem, Hayimarech Be'echad, he said, Echad, he didn't want to do it. And they said to him, Rebbe Ad Kan, why are you stopping here? Get to the point. Get to the miracle. Rebbe Chanina ben Tradi could have done the whole thing. So he answered them, no, that's not what I want to do. What I want to do is make the point that they cannot kill the spirit of the Jewish people. That's the point that I want to make. And if I Kabbalistically vanish them, I'll be making a different point to be sure, but I won't be making the point, which is the important point, and that's how Rabbi Akiva felt. By the way, Rabbi Akiva said like this, many, many Rabbanim at that time were against this. Many were against this. Possibly the majority was against it, actually. But this is what they held. So, again, they decreed him to burning at the stake. Al ishto lahariga. Hariga means chop off with her head. Valbita leisha b'kupa shalzonos. Reason? All of the shreifa shahaya hoges Hashem b'os Yosef. He would manipulate out loud the letters of the name of Hashem. V'hecha avid hachi. So the verse says, but how did he do that? V'atzanan. Don't we know that anybody who does this forfeits their portion in the world to come? What could be, by the way, do you have an idea what's wrong with doing that? What's wrong with manipulating the world with the letters of Hashem? Say you know how. But what could be wrong with it?
If Hashem is giving you the ability and the knowledge to do it, what should be wrong with it?
That was my question.
Yeah,
I'm echoing.
It's strengthening your question.
Right, so what could be wrong with it?
Are you like, you're saying you're above Hashem, like you have a power inside of Hashem
at
some kind of level?
Maybe. Ain lo chelek olam haba, look how strong it is. Ain lo chelek olam haba. So, I mean, it seems like this is what Hashem created. This is the nature that Hashem created. So if he created it, it's good.
Well, that's not true. There are many things that Hashem creates that doesn't mean he wants us to do it. The snake came along, there was a tree there, and Hashem clearly didn't want them to eat from it.
No, that's withstanding a challenge and a test. But I'm saying, to make, if the river is going this way and I have the power to make it go that way, so I'm creating a miracle. I'm changing the design. I'm messing with the design of Hashem.
It's like doing magic tricks, though. You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah, but why?
Because you're messing with Hashem.
Right, you're messing up his design. Like it's doubting, it's saying you did it this way, and I've got a better way to do it. I can get it's like I'm getting into the back room, and I have know where the buttons are to all of the nuclear stuff over here, and I can push what I want. I'm in control. So you're taking what you're doing is you're taking over. I think something similar to what you said. You're taking over the steering wheel, taking over the controls. And that's something we're not supposed to do. We're supposed to submit ourselves to the controls of Hashem. So I presume. So it's a secret that's known. And it's interesting. Rav Chanina ben Tradyan presumably died, or at least that was the theory, because of this. Yet, he didn't use this to save himself. He didn't use it to save himself. So he used it for other people.
In a certain sense, isn't it also a test, though, because Hashem gave them that knowledge, but it's a knowledge they're not allowed to use?
Right. Big test.
Wait, not that what knowledge we're not allowed to use, then?
Like what?
How to do all sorts of things that we shouldn't be doing.
Like what?
Well, I mean, not talking about, like, mystical stuff, but, like, the fact that I know how to...
Eat tray.
Well, yeah. I could come up with some, ways of stealing things and maybe get away with it. But
this is... That's also, by the way, it's not different than stealing or killing or anything else. But all what happens when you're stealing is you're deciding, Hashem decided that you should have money, not me. Now I go and steal it, so I'm saying, yeah, but I'll one up you on that. I know better. I know better who should have money and who shouldn't have money. Doesn't mean that we shouldn't do the normal things to get money, but, you know, if I'm stealing, so then what happens, I'm changing Hashem's plan. If I'm killing, Hashem decides this one should be alive, this one should be dead.
So maybe that's why Rabbi Akiva didn't use it.
That's why I didn't use it. And Rukh Hanina Batradya also didn't use it for himself.
Yeah.
So, okay.
But how is that really possible to change Hashem's plan, so to speak?
Because we have
Hashem
free choice.
Really in control.
We have free choice.
No, but...
So apparently there's a certain area that we can mess. And we can mess up. Okay. Otherwise, how can you ever kill somebody? But we didn't get to the fun part of the Gemara yet. So the Gemara says that, how did he do that? So the answer is, he says, you're not allowed to do it for yourself. You're allowed to do it for the purpose of education. Why did he get a punishment? Says because, anyways, he did it. Alishta, what was his wife guilty? Now listen to this. Alishta lahariga. Do you have that? That's the second wide line. Alishta lahariga. Why was his wife killed? Okay, we figured out something that he may have done wrong. What could his wife have done? So says the Gemara. Lo michata be. She didn't stop him. See why you should learn this with women. With wives. Could you imagine, like, you're married to the biggest tzaddik in the generation? Maybe you could imagine. you're married to the biggest tzaddik in the generation, and you see him doing this, like, wild Kabbalistic thing and performing miracles and healing sick people, and she's supposed to stop him. No, don't do that. Like, why is she supposed to stop? Can you imagine? We're not talking about she's married to some, some guy that she picked up. You're talking about Rav Chananya ben Tradya. We're talking about, like, the Gadol Hador, the Tzaddik Hador. And not only was she supposed to stop him, but she was actually, this is the only thing that the Chacham could find that she did wrong. Mikan Abruin, from this story, we have learned that Kol Mi Sheyesh B'yado Limchos Ve'eino Mocheh, that anybody who can protest a wrongdoing and does not protest, Nenah Shalom gets that punishment. It's as if you did it.
But I still don't understand this about healing sick people, because I thought, it's almost, you can think of people who say they're not going to have, from different religions that say, well, we're not going to have medicine because God decreed I'm sick. So, like, if you have a way that you're learned, whether it's medicine or Kabbalah, whatever, to heal somebody.
Big difference to be putting both in medicine is nature. It's using the world to heal. This is using something which is supernatural. Miracles. The big difference.
Well, praying for people is also reliable.
Okay, that's a good question. But apparently,
to do the miracle, it's not
right,
to do it yourself.
Very good. So the you have to understand that prayer is asking Hashem to take care of it. It's a submission to Hashem. That's the whole difference. But for me to say, that I can, this, by the way, it's not our subject. Maybe it should be, but it's not our, this whole idea of looking for the easy, fix, the miraculous fix, you go to the, I don't know what, the Ayin Hara lady or this guy or the Palmer, it's very, very scary. I don't know what that stuff is. I really don't know what that stuff is, but I just know it's not, I don't think it's the right way. The right way is to use nature as Hashem gave it to us and daven. Meaning, do the best you can, make a living, get medicine, do all of those things. And this is like a clear pasuk in the Torah that we're supposed to take medicine, rapo yirape. And you want to bring Hashem into it, so daven. Daven, mishaberach abisayim. But to go to try to manipulate to try to manipulate the creation and make things go differently, I don't know. It's not to say that you can't, but it's a little bit scary. And then the Gemara says, "Albitai leishev bekuba shalzonos." The decree was on the daughter to she has to live for the rest of her life in a brothel, meaning the Romans wanted her for their purposes. The Amar of Yochanan, so what did she do? So Rabbi Yochanan explained that this is what we know about what this daughter did. This is an unnamed daughter, by the way. We don't know who she was. Pamachas hoisabito malechas ifnegdoli Romi. Here was this woman, young woman, walking through the streets of the old city of Jerusalem, and the Romans were all sitting there with their whiskey sours, enjoying the view of Yerushalayim. And this girl walks by, Amru, and the Romans said aloud, Kama nos psiosea shariva zos. Look how beautiful, how beautifully she walks. Look how beautiful she is when she walks. Look at her steps. Psiosea. They noticed how she walks with a certain aristocratic way. These were proud Jews. When she heard that, biyad diktika psiosea, she started to walk even nicer. I don't know if that was conscious or unconscious, it doesn't say. But in other words, she bought into it, She bought into it. Instead of running away, oh, they're looking at me, she stood straighter. Yeah, diktika vipsiosel. So that's pretty harsh. These kind of harsh things, first of all, nobody would ever say that, you should be punished because you did these things. What they're saying is, what could they have possibly done wrong? And this was the only things that they could come up with. Behind the Dhamma, Reish Lakish, and Reish Lakish explained this, the Pasuk in Tehillim, Avon Akeva Yisubeni, that it was it literally means the sin of the heels of my heels surrounded me. And what it means is, Avon Hashanam Dashba Kova Ba'olam Hazeh, it means, in other words, he said like a pun on it. She walked with her heels. So he said that these are like the mitzvahs that people trample with their heels. Akev, trample with their heels and they belittle. Little things. Masav v'nosa b'yomadin, these are the things to take you. Okay, that's a tough gemara. But now, but that's not the tough one yet. I'm going to go out of order here to make this a little more understanding, but if you go to the last page that I gave you, where it says Lamed Zayin, so what we learned until now was background. Here's the story. Bruria. Last week we spoke a lot about Bruria. We spoke about Rabbi Meir, and we spoke about Bruria. I hope you remember about Rabbi Meir, but I'm going to go back over it a little bit anyways. But Rabbi Meir's and what he stood for was very important here. Bruria, the famous woman Bruria, Dvisu de Rabbi Meir, she was the wife of Rabbi Meir, and Barte de Rabbi Hanina ben Trajan, and the daughter of this Rabbi Hanina ben Trajan. She was not the daughter that was sentenced to live in a brothel. She was a different daughter that we haven't heard about until now. And she was the daughter. Now, we know Bruria was an extremely wise woman, possibly one of the wisest women in history. We know that we don't know that much about her, but if you go through pages and pages of the Gemara, you'll see that Bruria was kind of equal to one of the Tanoim of the Gemara. She would state an opinion and everybody would consider it. It wasn't so she was the only woman of that status. And Not just with her husband Reb Meir, with all of the rabbanim, and she would give them mussar, if she saw them doing something wrong, and she would correct them in halacha. And Bruria was a famous, right? We name our daughters after Bruria, we name schools after Bruria. Bruria was the daughter of this Reb Hanina ben Trajan. She was standing there, the Gemara says a little bit later, when her father was killed, and her mother was killed, and her sister was sentenced to live in this brothel. Amrele, and she once said, I'm on the third line here, Amrele, she once said to her husband, Rabbi Meir, Zila bimilsa, it's hurtful to me, embarrassing to me, humiliating to me, Yosva achosi, that my sister should sit, Bakuba shalzonos, that my sister lives in a brothel. I can't deal with that. And she said to her husband, Shekal Tarkavat Dinrin, take from the house a pot of dinar, a pot of gold. Take the pot of gold. The Azal V'Amar, Shekal Tarkavat Dinrin, he took a pot of gold, and the Azal V'Amar, and he went to, in other words, to bribe the prison guards to get her out. Azal V'Amar, he went there and he said like this is what he said to himself. He said, Elo Isavid Be'isura, if she didn't fall into the Roman trap of, you know, again, another harsh, we're learning only harsh Gemaras, the rest of it's not so harsh, I'm teaching you the harsh Gemaras. He said, if she didn't fall into the life of sin that women would fall into, obviously, if they're in a brothel, Elo Isavid Be'isura, Mishrachish Nisa, a miracle will happen, I'll be able to save her. The Avdus Isura, but if she fell into the Roman thing, Lo Isavin Nissa, a miracle will not happen. In other words, I'll go. Again, we're talking miracles. Rabbi Meir said, I'll go. He told his wife, I'll go. I'll try to get her out of jail. It'll take a miracle. And the miracle will happen if she's a holy woman. If she's not a holy woman, then the miracle won't happen. Also, he went. Nikat Nafshe Kichad Parasha, and he disguised himself as a Roman, as a knight, I think it means. Amar Lo, and he said to her, in other words, he disguised and he like a Roman knight coming into a brothel. That's what Rabbi Meir. In other words, this was his sister-in-law, but he was in disguise. And he wanted to see if she was a holy woman, or he wasn't a holy woman. She wasn't a holy woman. So he said to her, Hishab Ali, you know, come with me. He made her an offer. Amrulay, so she said to him, Dashtanana, I'm with the way of women. It's not a good time for me. Okay. Amrulay, so he said to her, Matachnalach, I'll wait. I don't know what. How long is he going to wait? He's going to wait. Amra, so she answered him back, Ika nefishin de shapari minai tuva. There are many women here that are much more beautiful than me. Amar, so Rabbi Meir said to himself, Shema mina, from this conversation, I could see, lo isavid ba'isur, that she's a holy woman. Probably, kol da'asi amri lehach. Everybody who comes, she's always getting out of doing an aveira. So he decided that she was a holy person, and he's going to save her because once she's a holy person, he'll be able to perform a miracle. So he went to the prison guard. Amar Lay, and he said to him, Havani Lali, Havani Hali. Here, take the money and let her out. Pot of gold. Amar Lay, so the prison guard said, Mistafina mi malchusa. What good is the money going to tell me? They're going to kill me if I open this prison gate. Mistafina, I'm afraid of the Malchus. Omer Lay, so he said to him, Shekol Tarkava de Dinri, take this money, Pal Gaplach, half of it give to the Romans that are going to kill you, bribe them, Upal Gol Havilach, and the other half keep for yourself. Here's the deal. Omer Lay, so he said to him, Bechishol mi ma'evit, and if they come after me, what do I do then? I'll tell you, I give them the money and they still want to kill me. So he said to them his famous words, Omer Lay, this is what he told the Roman prison guard. He said, then you'll tell them, Elokadra Meir Aneni. Just say those words. These are magic words. Maybe you've heard of it. Magic words, say Elokadra Meir Aneni. The God of Meir, answer me. Say a prayer. This guy who came to me was Meir. Say, may the God of Meir answer me. Elokadra Meir Aneni. Umishtaltzlas, and you'll see, you'll be saved. A miracle will happen. Amar Lay, Umiyamer de Hachihu. So he says, how am I supposed to believe you that this is going to work? You know, why would I believe that? Amar Lay, Hashtachazis. He says, I'll prove it to you. And Havahanu Kalbid Achli Inshe. There was by the guards had man eating dogs. Shkol Kala Sakbahu. You're all going to have like nightmares tonight. Hani Kalbid Achli Inshe. Shkol Kala Sakbahu. He went and he antagonized the dogs. Also, Alela Michle, and they all jumped on Reb Meir and this guy. Omar, and the fellow said, Alakad de Meir Aneni. He said the words, and Shafkua, they all ran away. and he let her loose. Okay, you proved it. Lasov, at the end, the higher up prison, you know, the wardens came in. Ishtama Milsa Bey Malka, they heard already in the palace of the king that this woman was let out. Asyu Askula Zakifa, and they said, we have to hang this prison guard. So they took him, Luzakifa, they took him up to the, gallows, thank you. Omar, he's standing at the gallows, and he says, Elokot de Meir Aneni. He says the words. Achtua, and the rope ripped, and he ran away. Amrulay, so they said to him, my height, like, what did you just say? How did you make that happen? Amrulay, and he said to them, Hachiyavulta, this was the story, this man came, and he told me to say this, and I say it, and it worked, so there's nothing you can do to me. Chakakul, so they realized right away that it must have been Rabbi Meir, who was a famous person to them as a great a miracle worker, if nothing else. So they hung his picture up all over Rome. Rome doesn't mean Rome, Italy. It means Rome in Israel, so the city in the Galilee. Rome. So they hung his picture up all over the place in the Roman cities, and they hung his picture up in the post office. Omri, and they said, "Kol lechazi lehu litpase. Anybody who sees him, catch him, get him, get Rabbi Meir. We don't want him loose." Yomachad. So a day happened, Chazua, and they saw him, some Romans saw him, Roita Basri, and they started to chase him. Rahat Mikamayu Va'ol Lebezonos. What did he do? He ran into a brothel, because that way they would think that Rameir wouldn't run into a brothel, so that's how he disguised himself. Ikadamri, another version of the story is Bishulei Nachum Chaza, he went and he saw some treif. And what did he do? Timash baha umasak baha. I love that expression. Timash, anybody know what it means? Timash baha umasak baha. He dipped his finger into the treif with this finger, and then he licked this thing. So from far away, I don't know why I like that expression, it talks to me. Timash baha umasak baha. Timash umasak. So, but it looked like he was eating treif. So in other words, he was trying to disguise himself as, I'm not your man. Ikadamri, a third version of the story is Os Eliyahu, that Eliyahu HaNavi came, Idmalei Kazona, dressed up as a harlot, and Krachte, and he hugged her. So they said he hugged him, Eliyahu HaNavi. Okay, three versions of the story. Take your pick. Omri, and they said, Chas v'sholom, Yira Meir Havi Lo'ave HaNavi. We know Rabbi Meir, he's a holy man, he wouldn't be doing this. Can't be Rabbi Meir, we see wrong. Now, here's the point that I wanted to get to. Kam Arak Lebavel. Rabbi Meir, who we spoke so much about last week and the week before, all of the story I'm telling you just for this one sentence. Come, he got up and he ran away to Bavel. He went from Israel to Iraq. Ikadamri Mishum Haimaisa. Some say because he was a fugitive and the Romans were running after him. But Ikadamri, but some say that the reason he ran away to Iraq is Mimaisa de Bruria, is because of the story of Bruria. What's the story of Bruria? What's the story of Bruria? Because of the story of his wife, Bruria. So if you'll be so kind as to take a look on Rashi on the left side, last line, Maisa de Bruria, what was the story of Bruria, his wife? Shepam Achas, then we go to the next page, because one time, Liglaga, she was making fun of Masha Amru Chachamim. She was making fun of the rabbis that said, Nashim Daitan Kalis Aleim. The rabbis had said that women, Daitan Kalis Aleim. Nashim Daitan Kalis. Does anybody want to translate it better, you than me?
Daitan, translate
it. Daitan Kalis.
Light,
white
mice.
Light das.
Right,
right. So what the actual, so that's a Gemara, unpopular Gemara. Nashim Daitan Kalis. Das is the there's Chachma. Chachma's knowledge, the amount of information you could have. Nobody says that there's any difference between men and women in the amount of knowledge you can hold. Bina is what you understand and what you do and how you extrapolate and how you work with that knowledge. This, the Gemara says, women have an advantage over men. Nashim bina yisera noidasla, have more bina than men, more ability to have bina. Even in nature, it just seems like it's a kind of a feminine thing to be extrapolating all the time. It's like that's bina, you know, just to work. Okay, with this information, I understand that. It's a different type of a mind. Das is your decision-making process, the decision. Nashim daitan kalus. Here, Chazal felt that there was like a lightweightness in the decision aspect of the intellectual process because, Rashi says there in Kedushin, because there's a very high level of emotion that Hashem created, and the emotion is pulling on the das all the time. So what happens is that even if you have the wisdom, and even if you have a higher level of understanding, it can affect the weightiness of the decision-making process. An emotional value will get involved, where a male presumably won't be as emotional. That's how Rashi understands it. So, you know, like, let's say a woman would be sitting as a judge. Truth of the matter is, some of the toughest judges I know in the United States are women. It happens to be. It's an interesting thing. But the way the Torah looks at it is that if women would be sitting as judges, they would see the whole halacha and all of the din. But there would be an element, let's say, of rachamim on one side. Over the other side, you can't, you know, some type of an emotional aspect to it. Bruria completely disagreed with this principle that the Chachamim of that time put forth as a legal thing. She disagreed. I'm no lightweight. I'm just as smart as them. I have just as much chachmas, more bina, and even more das. That was her understanding. One of but it's a little more complicated than this. Why? Because one of the things that comes with Nashim Daitan Kalos, and this is a halachic idea, is that there's a possibility of being seduced. Now, we know this is not true. You know, males are much worse than females in this regard, in terms of Yetzirah. But for different reasons. that's just taiva. But when it comes to like the emotional aspect, being able to withstand pressure, so Chazal were worried, even in the laws of Yichud, they were more worried about women than they were worried about men. They were well aware that men are sort of more dangerous than women, but they were worried about, again, the Nashim Daitan Kalos will you hold strong in a decision? You see, even like when Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was sentenced to death by the Romans and he ran away, he wouldn't tell his wife where he was. The reason was, the Gemara says, because he was afraid that if she gets pressured, she won't be able to withstand the pressure. That's what he said about his wife. So Bruria was strongly against this, and she used to argue this point with her husband, Rabbi Meir, all the time. Rabbi Meir said that this is what the Chacham say, and this is what it is. And she said, no. Okay. So a domestic dispute between Rabbi Meir, which did not end in a pretty way. Legalaga, she would laugh. Amash amru chachamim nashim daitan kalos aleihem. V'yamar lo, and he said to her, chayecha sovcha lahodos l'divrein. You'll see at the end that they're right and you're wrong. That's what he said to her. But Siva, now this is terrible, so you have to stay awake now for the next 10 minutes while I explain this. Siva, he mitamidav, he commanded one of his students, Linasosa Ladvara Vera, to try to seduce his wife. Crazy, right?
When was this? Before this battle
event. This is at the end.
And to be after.
Yeah. And this student, trying to prove the weakness of Bruria, would bother her all the time. Hifsir boyamim rabim achinis ratzis, until she gave in. She gave in at the end. Ukishinodula hadavar, and when she realized that this was a trick and what she did, chadka atzma, she committed suicide. V'orak Rabbi Meir machmas kisufa, and Rabbi Meir, who was the strongest gadol of the generation, was so embarrassed by this whole story that he ran to Iraq to Babel. So it's another it's another Girsa, you know, another version. But this is the version of Rashi.
How could the Gedolin have that man sin like that? Like, that's enough. They basically had the student that they made him go and sin.
Terrible, right?
And that's also like a blemish on him for, like, you know, where does that come in? Just to prove a point.
Entrapment. It's like putting a thing before a blind and all of that.
It's terrible.
I agree.
Well, he basically sinned. Like, talking about how men can't. He gets this, you know, it just doesn't.
Well, we don't know what happened. We don't know what actually happened.
And what was his,
hey,
why was that?
We even know who this fellow was. We even know who he was. It's a strange story, to say the least. It's a very strange story, an unknown story. By the way, from a historical point of view, Rashi tells the story. Nobody knows where he got it from. It's not a Gemara anywhere. It's not a Medrash. It's not anything. It's just Rashi. But just Rashi. Rashi is Rashi. I mean, Rashi is Rashi. So he knew the story, and he tells the story. Just to explain, the only reason he tells the story is just to explain why Rebbeir ran away to Bubba. So I want to try to explain a little bit of this. What we've been learning, and let me just repeat a little bit, what we have been learning here for the last couple of weeks is the unbelievable complex mind of this Rebbe Meir. So Rebbe Meir, let me remind you, the Gemara says that Lehaya B'dayrei K'mai Rebbe Meir, there was nobody in the generation as big as Rebbe Meir. He was the biggest mind in the generation. But ain halacha kamosa, but we never go according to his halacha. So, because mivnei shlo yachlu chachamim lamoid al soif daito. Do you remember we read this together? Because the chachamim can never understand what he was talking about. Well, this is a good example. They could never understand him. They realized this was a very, very brilliant man and a very great man and a pious man. He was a tzaddik. Meir was a tzaddik. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, we learned, who was the author of the Mishnah, said that I've only become what I've become because I happened to catch a glimpse of Rebbe Meir from the back. Meaning he didn't even see his front, he just watched him a little bit and he was able to achieve greatness. But so they understood this, they were standing in the presence of unbelievable greatness, but they wouldn't paskin halacha like him. Literally, because they couldn't, there's that das again. They couldn't stand at the end of his das, meaning they couldn't reach the end of his das. They couldn't understand his reasoning. At the end, they didn't understand the decisions that he made. Shahaya Omer, remember the Gemara says, because he was one that when he would teach, he would stand in front of a Beis Medrash of 1,000 students, and he would hold up a sheretz, and he would say, it's about this despicable treif thing, he would say 150 reasons why it's kosher. He wouldn't eat the sherets, but he would bother to explain why it could be kosher, or he would hold something kosher up, the Gemara says, and he would explain why this could be treif. Meaning he was like, you know, my kids used to have a book, Mar Ipcha. Like everything is upside down, everything's the opposite. Like, the Gemara wants to know, tells us what's that, why did he even do this? What was he trying to teach? And what we explained last week was that Rebbe Meir's understanding, what Rebbe Meir was trying to teach his students was that there is, on the outside level, things could look one way, and on the inside level, it could be very different. This is a very deep spiritual teaching, because what he taught was, Rebbe Tzadok explains this, what he taught was that when Hashem created the world, he created it by sorting things out and separating and separating and separating and separating. I pointed out last week that in Bereishis 12 times it says Vayavdil, right? The heaven from the earth, the water from the sand. Everything was separate. A man from woman. Everything was separated. Separate. What's separated means sorting out, refinement, getting it clearer. Before everything was all separate, everything was together. To be able to see not just the way it is in this world, all sorted out and nice, but to be able to climb back into a deeper world, into the world of Bria, into the world of Yetzirah, and see how everything really is together is really the essence of spirituality, because it's with that which you can understand Gamzu L'Tova, or Koman David Rachman L'Tava. But how could something bad be good? Because on some level, Hashem created it. So even though it comes out bad here, but the fact is, it becomes our job, incumbent upon us, to climb back and see deeper and see how bad can be good, and sometimes good can be bad, depending on, but it's not what it looks like on the outside. That was his teaching. Ein halacha kemelso. We cannot paskin halachas according to Rameyer, as great as he was, because he wasn't talking about this world. Halacha is for this world. Halacha is not for some deeper world. Halacha is for this world, the world of practical fleishiks, milchiks. You know, it's two different things, right? Jews, non-Jews, everything, zohar, nekeva, everything's separated. Everything is mavdil, mavdil, mavdil. Ein lechadas havdalah minayim. That's what we make havdalah. We're in this world, and this world is all about separation. So it can't be halachic. But it's an unbelievable teaching to be able to crawl back and to say, that person you think it's bad. I gave an example a couple of weeks ago of Yitzchak. Yitzchak wanted to bless Esav. And I showed you the Shem Shmuel says that he wasn't blind, but he was at a point in his life that he couldn't see. He was blind to anything bad. He couldn't see anything bad anymore. What it means is, he looked at Esav and he saw who was Esav's grandson, Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir was a Roman, and the Chanina of Atradia was a Roman, and Rabbi Meir's wife Bruria was a Roman. They were all came from Romans, and Shmaya of Avtalion were Romans. And Yitzhak, the Shem Yishmuel says that Yitzhak looked at Esav. He saw all these great people that came from him. He saw a greatness in Esav, but it wasn't Rivka. Saw the halacha. The halacha is that Yaakov is the tzaddik. In this world, Yaakov is the tzaddik. But on a higher world, he saw something in Esav that Yaakov even didn't have. It's hard to understand this, but we need to understand that it could go backwards. Let me just finish the thought. So what Rabbi Meir stood for, this is what we've been explaining, what Rabbi Meir stood for is being able to see deeper. He didn't care that the halacha wasn't like him. He wasn't a posek. It was a Rosh Hashiva. The halacha, he was teaching people how to think, a new way to think. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the author of the Mishnah, looked at him from afar and he said, okay, that's a whole new way of understanding life and understanding of people. Don't take anything at face value, and sometimes you will see exactly the opposite. So it's a very interesting thing here. I just want to say this, that here's Rabbi Meir. He says, I want to see if my sister-in-law is a holy woman, then she'll have a miracle and I'll save her. So he tests her holiness. This was a very Rabbi Meir thing to do. It was a Rabbi Meir thing to do because he wasn't interested in whether she says she's holy or she looks like she's very unholy. She's in a brothel. Let's go a step deeper and find out what she really, really is. And this is why he did this whole trick to do this. Now, we can look at, you know, we Westerners will look at this and say, like, was that the right way to do it? I mean, okay, I don't know how he could have done it or how else he could have done it. I'm not sure. I'm sure there's very deep Kabbalistic things here. But what I do understand is that what he was saying is not everything is the way it's cracked up to be. Not everything is so clear the way it seems. So here's this woman who lives in a brothel. No, she's a holy person. She's a holy person. And he proved that she was the only person he got behind the scenes. Now, what happened was, and this is the hard one to swallow, is that with his own wife, Bruria, he said, okay, you know, you're a great woman, you're a brilliant woman, but you're being malagleg, you're saying that my very, very deepest inside is not Noshim Daitan Kalos. When you're arguing with the Chachamim, when they're putting down a halachic principle, so you're arguing and you're saying that you're different, I can prove to you that you're deep, deep inside, although you're brilliant and although you're as smart as the Chachamim, I could prove to you that you too can be seduced. Now, I don't think that he thought it was going to come out that, like this, that I think this is a tragedy, and he ran away in embarrassment. There's no question that this was a tragedy. This was also, Berea was a tzaddikus. at the end, you know, we named schools after her, interestingly. But she was a tzaddik. But what he was after, this is the same Rebbe Meir who was always conscious of the disguise and the inside. And how deep is the disguise? You know, like the disguise could be just a Purim costume, or the disguise could be your skin, or the disguise could be your whole way of acting. And then there's Hashem's disguise, where things could look bad and they're really good. Or things could look good and they're really pretty bad. You know, like the whole Hanukkah story, like the Greek thing that looked really good. The Greeks were glitzy, looked good. So, but you know, we came along and said, no, we don't think that's good. So it's unpopular. It's always unpopular to go beneath the surface and to question everything that everybody believes to be unquestionable. You know, this is good. But Rebbe Meir questioned. He even held a sheretz up in the air in the classroom, and he says, is this good or bad? Everyone says bad. Well, let's analyze it. Why is it bad? Maybe it's good. So you know, to this ability to question everything, again, it wasn't just an intellectual ability. This was the greatest depth. This was what allowed him to learn from his teacher, Acher, Elisha ben Avuya, because where everyone said bad, he said good. And what did he say? He said, it's like you find a pomegranate, a rimon, and it looks bad, and you peel it, and you take away all things, and inside you have some good stuff. Meaning he was looking deep beneath the sea surface. So the teaching of Rebbe Meir, which is so important to us, is you have to look all the way in. That was what Rebbe Meir said, to the point that it ended up being catastrophic. It ended up being catastrophic, but we have to get back, not next week, by the way, next week is Hanukkah, and the week after is Hanukkah, right? So I'm full of Hanukkah parties. Please come back in 3 weeks, right after Hanukkah, and we'll live more. But we're not even finished with Rebbe Meir yet, still on Rebbe Meir, but the teaching is to look all the way in, surface, peel away all of the layers until you get down to the essence of it, which in the case of Brewery came out tragic, in the case of sister-in-law came out good. Look at this irony that we end up with. You know, here's Bruria, the Gadol Hador, right? Tzaddikus of the generation. And here's her sister who's living in a brothel. The sister ends up being the righteous woman, and Bruria ends up being the one who fell into a pit. Like, so this was what Rebbe Meir brought out. This wasn't easy, but it was so important during the times that he lived, because in the Roman times people were suffering so, and they needed to understand. I think this is what I think it was all about. They needed to understand that with all the suffering, I mean, look, we know what suffering is, and you know, it's already, we're not so far away from our parents and grandparents that went through such suffering. And how are you saying tzedakah din? Like, how do you make peace with this? And the only way to make peace is to look so deeply that it becomes almost counterintuitive. To look so deeply and to be able to say gamzu l'tova, like his Rebbe said. Gamzu l'tova, nachamish gamzu. That's the essence, and that the Chachamim couldn't understand. They couldn't get as far as him. Amdu Chachamim asof taita. They couldn't get as far as him. They knew he was great, but they couldn't get as far as him. So that's my understanding of a difficult Gemara. Yes, what did you want to say?
I don't think
he passed me. I think there's a